Now, if you're riding a bicycle to work, you're just part of the society in which we live. It has grown and grown over the last decade. Let me speak to Anne Madden from Sustrans. Anne, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm very well, Anne. Belfast, part of this initiative, which is called Bike Life, Bike Life 2017. Yes. What are the findings?
Well, our top finding is support people in Belfast have for making cycling safer. We surveyed 1,100 residents in Belfast, and that was both people who cycle and people who never ride a bike. And four out of five people want more protected bike routes to make cycling safer, even if that means less space for other road traffic. So that's quite different to the general perception that people want more space for cars on our roads.
So, Anne, tell us, who are these people? I know it's a pretty decent survey, 1,100 or whatever. And what percentage of 1,100 people stopped in the street or who would be filling in a survey online?
Well, it was done by the independent survey company ICM, so it's a respected company. They were phoned, there's a full survey taken. There's lots more detail than that, but that was one of the most interesting findings we thought. And actually Belfast support for more protected bike routes was higher than the other six cities in the project. So there were other interesting findings, such as the number of people that never ride a bike that still overwhelmingly support segregated cycle routes. That was 79%. And there were 54% of people who said that they either would like to cycle more or would like to begin cycling. So there's great potential for more people to get on their bikes, both for their commute or for getting about on their everyday journeys.
Do we not already have all the cycle lanes that we need? I would have expected that at this moment in time, advantage is with bus and bicycle, and understandably so, because there's a big push towards getting people onto public transport, and there is an appetite for riding a bicycle, which I may not have recognised 10 years ago. So I'm with you on this, but I'm wondering, if we narrow the roads any more for the car, how on earth will a commuter get to work?
Well, we actually have a very poor provision for cycle routes in Belfast and across the seven cities that took part in the project. Currently across the UK, cities that are involved in this, there are only 19 miles of cycle routes that are physically separated from traffic and pedestrians. Quite a lot of our routes are shared pavements or greenways. So that equates to, that 19 miles equates to just 0.2% of the total miles of roads across the cities. You compare that to the likes of Copenhagen, where approximately 230 miles of cycle routes are provided, which are physically separated from traffic and pedestrians. So we really have a long, long way to go. I think this is an interesting statistic in the report, which shows that for a 4 metre wide lane, traffic lane, you can carry 800 to 1,100 people in cars, okay, per hour, compared to 5,000 to 10,000 people on bikes. And the most efficient use of space of all is actually bus passengers, which for the same road lane can carry 8 to 12,000 bus passengers. So really what we're saying, what this report is pointing out, is that in terms of efficient use of our urban areas, public transport, walking and cycling are the best use of the roads, not to provide more road space for driving cars.
But we need a better bus service, don't we? We need a more reliable train service. We need a facility that is there for us. And I know they are taking steps to provide that, certainly here in Belfast, even as we speak. We can see the disruption along the roads where they're putting these special facilities in place. Now, are we getting closer to a mindset where you go out the door, you get on the bus, or you get on your bicycle? For many people, including for myself, and I was challenged even during the course of this year to try it for a day. I have to say, for many people,
to use the bus and the train. Okay.
And I enjoyed it on the day. It was a pleasure.
Yes,
but I'm just.
You could read, Frank, and you can
do
look
all
at
these
your
things
safely.
Yeah,
things you can't do in a car.
But when I come out of the house first thing in the morning, and I'm it's a wet, miserable day, and my car's sitting there. I don't yeah. want to have to walk, you know, and it is about maybe quarter of a mile to a bus stop.
Okay.
And I certainly don't want to get in a bicycle.
That's a good bit of exercise, Frank, though, that saves you, you know, having to go to the gym that evening. You know, if you did that quarter mile every day, 5 days a week, just imagine, you know, the calories that you would lose.
I know, but you see the way you're arguing it. You're arguing it in favour, in a very reasonable way, by suggesting that I will get more exercise. Whereas I can get exercise in the evening. I can get exercise.
But do you have the time in the evening, Frank? You're a busy radio, TV presenter, you know, and lots of us don't have the time. And what we constantly see is that people spend an hour or more every night in the gym when they could spend that time, you know, actively commuting to work, either by bike or on foot,
yeah,
or
but,
taking
but,
the bus and take, you know, go, walking to the bus stop. All of those things would certainly reduce the amount of time you'd have to spend later in the evening going to the gym, and also motivating yourself. At least you know, well, I have to get to work. If you can include or integrate walking and cycling into your everyday routine, that's absolutely, you know, vital. There was a report out just last week.
The way you paint the picture, I understand where you're coming from, because you're with
yeah.
SysTrans. You want people to use public transport.
Not just
you want people to be on the bicycle. You're absolutely,
yeah.
you are convinced it is the way to go. And I'm
not for everybody, no,
I'm
not for
suggesting
Frank.
That you're wrong. However, let me take yeah. you back to, you know, 25 to 8 in the morning, a wet morning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get on a bicycle. I don't want to walk to
yeah.
a bus stop. I
yeah.
want to drive my car, which has cost me a significant amount of money
yes.
to buy, to tax, to insure, and to put on the road.
Yeah.
So therefore, that's the way I want to travel to work. And when I get to work, I want to be fresh, and I want to be clean, and I don't want to be wet
yeah.
and soggy and sweaty and all the things
yeah.
that cyclists are.
Well, that, I wouldn't actually agree with that. I mean, what I was going to say there was I would recommend cycling to work if you live within five, you know, I actually cycle to work twice a week, 10 miles from work, and, you know, I don't find them sweaty or as bad as you're making out. And actually, in terms of the weather, there was a report carried out by the Department for Infrastructure, Andrew Grieve, head of the cycling unit, which found that at least 80% of you know, commuting times were dry in Northern Ireland. There is a perception that it is wetter than it is, and certainly, yes, this time of year, you know, it seems to be, you know,
You're talking to a weather man here, Anne. You're talking
to
a weather forecaster.
That was a proper scientific survey that was done. We certainly won't melt. We would recommend people wear waterproofs if they want to cycle, you know, through all weathers. What you have to understand, though, Frank, is how come so many more people cycle to work in the likes of Copenhagen and Amsterdam, which has as wet, if not a wetter, climate than Northern Ireland. It is possible, and I think excuses like that are simply excuses.
Okay. Ken's got a point in relation to the cycling. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Frank. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Ken. Go ahead.
I am a cyclist, but also a motorist, as most people are nowadays. What I don't understand is cyclists being allowed to cycle into the bus lane, because all that is doing is you have people going commuting at peak time to Belfast, and you have people travelling in the bus, maybe 40 or 50 people in the bus, and they're being held up by a cyclist maybe doing 12, 13 miles an hour.
This is a very valid point. So therefore, should we have a bus lane and a cycling lane and one less lane for the cars?
Well, this is a hard point because we tax the motorists on everything. So the petrol, his insurance, when he purchases a car, he's the one that's contributing to the roads. The problem is we need designated lanes for cyclists where buses are allowed to travel free. What I see, the government are spending millions of pounds on putting in a rapid transport system. It's not going to be a rapid transport system. A cyclist can cycle in front of them, and the buses are down to 10, 12 miles an hour.
Just on that, I'm not certain with the absolutely new roads that they're putting in, or the new lanes, rather, they're putting in with these very smooth-running buses, that cyclists are going to be allowed to cycle in front of them. I'm open to guidance on it. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, then they need to widen the roads even further, because they need a designated lane for the cyclist on the left-hand side. You can't have them on the right-hand side of a large, I think they're going to be articulated vehicles, because they're going to be like a bendy bus. And if that's the case, it would be the most dangerous place for a cyclist. Cyclists have a responsibility to themselves to look after themselves safely on the road. And travelling in peak times through Belfast I think they're taking their life in their own hands. I cycle at the weekends. I enjoy my cycling, and I'm a commuter as well. And I get very frustrated by some of the cyclists who, when they come to a red light, oh, they'll just go up the footpath, across the road there, and then back down in front of the cars again. And they're creating more congestion at peak times than they think they're doing good for themselves.
Yeah, I have another way of looking at that, Ken, as long as you're not taking any risk, of course. As long as you're not taking any risk. When I'm travelling behind a cyclist, and he or she comes to the traffic lights, and they're first at the traffic lights, even if they overtake you at the traffic lights, they're always first there. They sit in the green box and they're first to pull away, so they hold everybody up. I have this sort of admiration for the cyclist who gets off his or her bicycle, who wheels it as a pedestrian along the pavement, crosses at the Pelican Crossing, and then rides on in front of me while I'm still sitting in waiting for the red light. There's nothing sort of browns me off more than cyclists sitting at the red lights, and then whenever they get up to go, that takes them forever to get the speed up again, and they're holding everyone else up. Now, you have to be incredibly courteous, and you have to be patient, because a cyclist can only go as far as his thighs are going to carry, as fast as his thighs are going to carry him, but it does slow the whole process down. And likewise, I have sympathy for the person who's chosen to go on the bus, who is now driving behind a bicycle. Do cyclists never consider the traffic behind them and think, I can't go as fast as this, I'll pull in and let other people pass?
If that was the case, Frank, they wouldn't be on the roads in the first place. You know, a lot of cyclists have the attitude, well, we're here and we own the road, yet they contribute absolutely nothing to the road as far as maintenance or anything to the road, whereas the motorist has through the nose for it all.
Yeah, but in fairness, Ken, a lot of cyclists are also motorists. You know, that we have to keep that in mind. You've just admitted yourself you're a motorist too, as a cyclist. I cycle a bit, but I'm a motorist. I would say the vast majority of people who cycle a lot also pay car tax. They pay and they pay their inland revenue. They pay their dues, so they pay their income tax. So they have. It's not as if they're freeloaders, cyclists. I don't think it's fair to say that. However, they don't have any form of insurance, or unless they're in clubs or whatever. A lot of cyclists you tend to find the cyclists who really annoy you, the ones who zoom in and out through the traffic, the ones who, you know, will come down the inside of a queue of traffic or the outside of a queue of traffic, who'll weave and duck and dive, they are in the minority. The vast majority of cyclists are very competent and very skilled. And I should emphasise that cyclists will be, just had this confirmed by Anne from Sustrans, will be allowed in the new rapid transit bus lanes. So those smooth buses will be held up by cyclists.
Isn't that the problem with the infrastructure we have? It's an antiquated infrastructure. When they widened the lanes, could they not have widened it another 3 feet? They have there's footpaths right along the Upper Newtonards Road, right along the Falls Road. People aren't using. You know, they don't need to be 10 foot wide footpaths. You know, we could put them into take a specific place and put the cyclists into that, where they're not causing hassle to the motorists. The buses aren't being held up. Maybe traffic and proper enforcement of it all is the crucial thing. If there's no enforcement, there's no sense in even having the rapid transport system, because people are still parking in the bus lanes at the times when they shouldn't be.
Yeah, well, there's some enforcement there is, and there's enforcement against cyclists as well. We've had the police talking about that here on the programme. But there's many's a mad idiot who's out there on a bicycle, but then, of course, there's many's a mad idiot who's out there in a car.
Oh, very much so. That's why I cycle only at the weekends. I don't want to hold up the traffic during the week when people are trying to get to their work.
You see, I'm the same mindset. I see cyclists as someone who holds me up. You know, on a wet, dank winter's morning, I think to myself, what on earth are they at? You know, could they not at least get the bus riding that bicycle in the driving rain, putting themselves at risk, leaving me open to, and other road users open to, the risk of having to avoid them? if they're being incredibly cautious and they are riding to the rules of the road, yes, that's fine. But some of them, they don't have high-vis gear on. Some of them don't have any lights on the bicycle. You know, you just think to yourself, this is madness. These people need to be reined in. However, the majority of them, in fairness, the majority of them do adhere to the rules, do have high-vis, and do have lights on their bicycles. But on a really dirty, wet morning, I can't understand why they want to take the bicycle. That's the bit that surprises me.
Well, the bit that surprises me is one of your... last time you discussed this, one of your callers said that, you know, it's healthy for him. It's not healthy. He's creating more pollution by holding up all the traffic during peak times. Personally, I would have a ban on cycling during peak times to allow the traffic to flow, and then they can get on the bikes anytime they want after that.
Again, you're severe. At least we did have Anne, who is from Sustrans, on before 10 o'clock. That's the other side of the argument. Do let us know, 90333105, and maybe what's needed is a much greater understanding of the benefits of the bicycle. Maybe we need to be much more open to promoting the bicycle and accepting of the fact that the car is going to take up less room on the road. That could be the Copenhagen-type answer to the question, to, I suppose, the challenge that has been ongoing for the best part of a decade here now. And there is a sense that the cyclists' message is getting across in a positive way, but not to Ken.